Welcome, everyone, joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy. My call sign is AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob, KD2NVB, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. We offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. We also have an Echo Link node available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month, and all of this information can also be found on our club website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Bob KD2NVB will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions, future topics of interest on these technical nets, please let us know either here, or you can use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Hi, this is Bob KD2NVB, looking forward to a provocative or interesting TechNet tonight. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, well, we will see what we will see. Things have been kind of quiet at the beginning of many of these technical nets, but you never know. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, and we're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they would like to discuss, hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, and then we'll put you on the list.
Say, AC2ZV, Roy, this is William checking in. I just have a quick question. I'd like to do the puzzle with you tonight. I'm certainly hoping you get other participants asking you different kinds of questions, but I'd like to do the puzzle with you. Hopefully you've got one in store for us.
Okay, we can do that. As long as someone's interested in it, usually, you know, there's, at best there's one person listening, you know, so not much of interest. But okay, for your sake, and if anyone else wants to play along, we'll do the puzzle tonight.
Great. Why don't you just remind me where it is, and we'll tell me which one we're going to do, and I'll check it out.
The easiest thing to do is go over to your browser and type in at the very top of the URL puzzle.kc2rc.com, and that should take you to the top of a puzzle page.
Okay, I'll do that. And when I do that, you're going to knock me off of Echo Link. So I'll get on the radio. So in a few minutes, I'll come back and do that and be available. Meanwhile, I'll be listening for other people's questions.
Welcome to...
Okie doke. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, starting at around 9 p.m., and we stick around for as long as anyone has any questions or topics or conversation. And if we don't get much, we quit early. If we get a lot, we've been known to sit around here until 11:30. Anyway, if anyone has any questions or topics for discussions, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. Roy, I'm using my handheld. First, do you copy? And two, can you explain QRP?
Okay, I can copy you. About 10, 20% noise, but you're readable. QRP is just one of the Q codes that was very popular back when all communication was CW. But since people used it for CW and when phone became developed, they started to use it for phone as well. So it's a Q code for low power. In this case, it's 5 watts and below. Some people feel that they need a challenge. You know, there's some guys out there that have T-shirts that read "Life is too short for QRP." Other people love QRP. It doesn't require a big power source. You know, you can go portable, and there's a lot of radios out there that are designed to be light and small and operate with a 5-watt output. So QRP means that your signal strength is 5 watts or lower. Some people use the term QQRP or QRPP for something like very, very, very low power, like half of a watt. Okay, Sam, did you get that? Can you repeat that again? Well, once again, I am AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Anyone has any questions or comments, please hit that push to talk and ID. Oh, well, nothing much heard. William, are you back on the air? I don't see you on Echolink, so I guess not.
Good to Yankee Golf. Roy, I'm now at my other transceiver. How's the signal? And the question is, could you repeat the site for the tech questions for this evening? I'd like to look at it. Thank you.
Okay, very good. You're full quieting, so no noise in the background. So this is a better signal. You just type into your browser the word puzzle.kc2rc.com. Say again, you got cut off. You have to, after you push the talk, give it a second or so for the repeater to do what it does.
I copied that, and thank you for teaching me how to use the repeater system. I'm relatively new to all of this. Thank you, Roy.
My pleasure, Sam. You know, we all had to learn it. So, William, I see you're back on Echolink. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I checked out the puzzle, and it made me think of a question. You know, I was looking at the Tesla coils and how the Tesla coils and stuff are made, and it seems like he did a lot of things, and I'm not so sure I understand exactly what he was doing, because it seemed like he had a high-frequency generator and a spark gap in series somehow to do to make the voltage multiply as high as he did. And I'm wondering if you could explain how he was able to do that.
Gosh, there's a guy on the Limar TechNet who spent years and years trying to reproduce some of Tesla's magic. It's basically just an self-oscillation circuit with the resonance at, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 kilohertz with a step-up transformer. So it's the means of getting the oscillation changed over the years. Nowadays, as far as I'm aware, everyone uses solid-state astable oscillators to accomplish the frequency. And the real magic is primarily the step-up transformer that the coil is made up of.
Yeah, but I think I saw some pictures where there were two secondaries and a spark gap involved in making it all happen. And it didn't really make that much sense to me. And I'm wondering if that's something that I'm just hallucinating or if that's something that's real.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm trying to remember if I ever saw any real schematic for the original ones. The problem is that everyone kind of does it the simple, easy route. I don't see a spark gap, you know, could be fashioned, but every time I've seen a YouTube or anything else that's making modern day Tesla coils, they're using transistors. They don't even use vacuum tubes anymore for that purpose. So you know, that aspect of the technology is kind of archaic, and it's far easier to build a far more stable device using simple nonlinear transistors in a feedback loop. So I don't know what the original design was and how the spark gap worked as part of the Tesla electric oil, you know, back in the early 1900s. I just know that, you know, modern day Tesla coils all kind of use pretty much solid state oscillation circuits.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I thought as much. It seemed like there was something going on with the transformers and like with the coils, and like there was two secondaries. I'll have to see if I can find that book again and see if I can find that reference. But it seemed like it was, when I'm thinking about making 1,000,000 volts, I don't know if you had two secondaries, if you can like multiply the windings, if you go 10 to 1 on one and 10 to 1 on the other, you can get 100 to 1 out of a, you know, 20th of the wire, or I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, if you hook them up, well, you'd have to have two primaries and two secondaries. If you had two secondary loops and you connected them in any way, shape, or form, you're not going to get that much more. You might be able to double the amount of the voltage coming out of two secondaries hooked up in series. But that you know, it wouldn't multiply a tenfold or anything. It just would double it. It depends upon the windings. If you have the more windings in the secondary, the higher the voltage conversion. So it's probably most efficient to use it for a single secondary coil as opposed to two secondary coils that are hooked up in series, which pretty much act the same way as a single longer secondary coil.
This is the KCQRC repeater. Please use PL88.5.
Okay, hi. Thanks a lot, Roy, for that answer. Dropped out there for a second, but I got most of it. Thanks a lot. And that your puzzle inspired me. That's why I was wondering how they got up to 1,000,000 volts. That's really where I was coming from.
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's just a ratio of the primaries to the secondary.
Yeah, there's got to be some magic to it. I mean, you see these pictures of how he had the primaries, which were these big barrel-shaped things, you know, and he's sitting in this chair, and then there's a spider web thing behind it, and it looks like, you know, all of that is set to be able to be very high voltage kind of stuff, so it doesn't, sparks don't jump, and then there's sparks all over the room. I don't know. It's just very curious about how that's really done.
Okay. If you find out anything more on that, please come back and tell us. He was, you know, among other things, he was a bit of a showman, so he liked to put on a show. So sometimes some of the things that he had that he showed people had more to do with superficial appearance as opposed to technology. I mean, he was a brilliant technical guy, and he kind of taught everyone what they learned about AC electricity. He was the big proponent of AC, and the other side would be Edison was promoting direct current utility power.
Yeah, and then they had to have a power station every mile or something like that. Boy, and they were burning coal, stringing wires up all over the city. What a mess you could have imagined, and with that, with all the horse manure, what a mess.
Well, people didn't know any better. That's how towns are, or were. You know, you had to get around, and the best way was horses and carriages, and horses drop things. So, New York, and New York was relatively highly populated back then, and so the number of horse-drawn carriages was very high, and, you know, that stuff happens. But thankfully, we live in different times. Nowadays, electric vehicles don't even give you exhaust.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Okay, well, maybe there's some other guys with some questions. You answered somebody's question earlier. That was good. I don't really have any more questions. But thanks for doing the TechNet. I always like checking in.
Okie doke. Well, once again, I am AC2GS, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're open for business. We have been for 20 minutes. So if anyone out there has any technical questions or topics that they would like to discuss, please hit that push to talk. Well, looks like it's going to be a quiet night. William, would you like me to present the TechNet puzzle? It seems that William has fallen off of EchoLink again. We'll give him a little bit more time. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the net control operator for the semi-monthly Kings County Radio Club technical net. So if anyone out there listening has a question of a technical nature and would like to ask, or a subject they'd like to discuss about amateur radio or some aspect of science and technology, please hit that push to talk and ID yourselves. William, are you back on Echolink?
Messing with the phone. It used to work where you could have the Echolink in the background, and as soon as like a message comes in or something like that, it's knocking me off the air. So, you know, I know not to touch anything now.
Okay, yeah, it can be strange. You know, well, they push new editions, so maybe they've changed the way that it works and it's not quite ready for prime time. Let's do the TechNet puzzle. You suggested that you were interested in it, so this is what it is. It says, increasing the number of turns on the secondary winding of a transformer will, and it gives you four different choices, and you have to pick the best answer. So, again, increasing the number of turns on the secondary winding of a transformer will. The choices are A, increase the current output of the transformer. B, increase the power output of the transformer. C, have no effect on the transformer's output. Or D, increase the voltage output of the transformer. Anyone want to hazard a guess?
VB, I can hazard a guess. I think you kind of answered it in your discussion of Tesla. I can wait, or I can do it. I can put my guess out now.
You might as well put it out now.
I say D, increase the voltage output, which was my guess before, but I was kind of wavering a little bit between A and D, but I figured D would make more sense. Hold on, right. Back to you.
William?
AC2ZV. Yeah, hi, I'm here. Yep, he's right. It does do the voltage. I just found this Tesla book. I don't know if this one is the one with the schematic in it or not, but it's got him sitting in this picture with this spider. You know, the problem with all this stuff is they talk about it, but they never explain how it works like in an engineering book. So that's what I'm looking for. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay, well, you were both right. By increasing the number of turns, the loops, the windings, however you want to describe it, of the secondary coil, you increase the voltage. The power kind of stays the same, so you decrease the amperage. Then the power is pretty much the same. So that's why all the other answers are absolutely positively wrong. So the answer, correct answer is answer D, increases the voltage output of the transformer. So the ratio of the coils in the primary to the secondary determine the multiplication or division of the voltage potential that comes out of the secondary coils. You can have a step-up transformer or you can have a step-down transformer. Most of the times we deal with step-down transformers because we're pulling 120 volts of alternating current from the outlet, and most times our electrical equipment requires far less than 120 volts. So it has less... its ratio has less windings for the secondary than the primary in most cases. But transformers are wonderful little things, and they work in semi-mysterious ways to most people. We talk about far field and near field with antennas, and transformers operate in their own little near field where they have the same characteristics as RF waves do when you're within the near field of your radiating antenna. Sometimes they call that, in addition to the near field, they call it the transformer field because of that reasoning. So that's transformers. Any other questions or comments for tonight, or are we going to call it an early night here?
KC2RC.
Basically, you want to hear about it?
Okay.
Okay, what I found was it starts off with a generator, a low-frequency alternator on one side, just basically making a thing, and then there's a standard transformer, like doing thing with the primary and the secondary. After that transformer, there's a capacitor, and then there's a spark gap, which has a magnet across it, and that goes to another high-ratio coil transformer, and that goes to another spark gap, and that's what makes the big spark up on the top. And I think it's basically something to do with the thing called a Holtz machine, which it's probably Tesla was modifying this Holtz machine or something. I don't know, but that's what I got out of this book, and I'm trying to figure out what they're talking about.
Well, I would assume that he has something that increases the frequency of the alternating current, because the generator alternations are kind of based on how fast, unless you play with fast and loose with the gears, of how fast you turn the gears. So, and my guess is that the the Tesla coil effect is created from currents that are alternating in the kilocycles. So there's something that's getting it to oscillate. I don't know what, but somehow, you know, regular alternator output voltage differences would require a much more efficient transformer to be as effective as it is. So there's got to be something in it that picks up harmonics and just kind of makes it seem to be a much higher frequency alternating current.
Yeah, I think that's the key to it. I think you hit it on the head. I think what's going on is the first transformer makes a good high voltage, but it goes into a tuned circuit, which is a capacitor and a coil, and that tuned circuit has got a spark gap on it. And so probably what happens is you can, by impressing the first the first voltage on the primary, the secondary conducts, but it, because of the spark gap and the tuned circuit, it probably conducts at a much higher frequency. You know, the magnets used to tune it in there or something, and that's how he gets up to a higher frequency using this magnet spark gap thing. And then that goes through a second, that then hooks into another transformer, which is making the super high voltage, which goes up to the giant ball on the top. So the spark gap must be the frequency multiplier part of it all. That's what I was missing.
I think it's just acting as a nonlinear conductor. If you put a current, an alternating current through a nonlinear conductor like a diode or even a rusty metal contacts, you get the harmonics. So I think the spark gap is acting as some nonlinear device that's generating a harmonic-rich environment, and then you're putting it through a tuned circuit, which is selectively passing the high-frequency current, not the slow original from the generator and stuff. I think that's what was going on back then. But like I said, these days there's really no need. It's very inefficient to do it that way. So nowadays they simply have a high-frequency oscillator circuit built in, and they don't have to deal with extracting out harmonics from noisy non-sine wave type of voltage alternations.
It must have been real noisy. I mean, first of all, the sparks in the spark gap just generate little energy all up and down the spectrum, and then, you know, the big spark, big boom, and then the frequency, you know, it's in our radio band, so that would make a giant noise source in our radio band, probably even up to as high as 150 megahertz even, who knows. But yeah, I think that's it. And I do agree that they do use, solid state right now. I have a plasma sphere that does the same thing, and it's got a very small electronics package in it. Doesn't have generators and spark gaps, that's for sure.
Yeah. Modern days have easier, more efficient solutions. Spark gap transmitters were awful things. I mean, historically, they're intriguing. They were noisy, and they gave off vast quantities of ozone gas, which can be very irritating for people's lungs. So spark gap transmitters and generators were things that you shouldn't have indoors, and you should have very good ventilation, and even that, it's not a healthy thing to use.
Similar to carbon arc lighting, I would imagine. You certainly have to vent that stuff out.
Well, yeah, but that's carbon dioxide. I mean, you'll kind of notice the fact that you're having problems breathing, whereas ozone can sort of sneak up on you if you're not familiar with it. You can have serious lung damage. I mean, the worst that could happen from excessive carbon dioxide exposure is you may collapse. But if they take you outdoors, if you haven't had too much carbon monoxide, the carbon dioxide diffuses relatively easily. The carbon monoxide, some people need oxygen before they can kind of disperse it out of their lungs. But with ozone, it actually produces physical damage to the cells that are making the lungs work. So you can get into significant trouble breathing in too much ozone.
Yep. Well, Thanks for that, Roy. I really appreciate it. And next time I use my electric drill with those little blue lights down inside, I'll remember to not breathe.
Yeah, I mean, there's really, there are machines. There are ozone sterilizing machines, deodorizing machines, and some of them are specifically designed with warning labels and timers and instructions that you should take it to an enclosed area and set the timer and then walk out and make sure the door is closed and then, you know, watch your watch of when the timer was set to turn off, and then and only then open all the windows and all the doors and let the ozone kind of clear out of the area, and only then kind of go in there and inspect what you've deodorized or disinfected.
Those must be very powerful machines. I can imagine that they'd be very useful in certain instances. Well, thanks for the TechNet and all the discussion on this rainy night, Roy. And thanks a lot. Have a great evening.
Thank you, William. I appreciate your coming and participating. It's important to the net, and I really do appreciate when you do it. In the past, there used to be a technology when people decided that they wanted air filtration that was kind of fancy. They sold these electrostatic air filters, and the idea was you charged up the voltage potential between some metallic grill and a metal core, and you passed air through it, and the small dust particles would kind of stick to the metal, and then you had to deal with cleaning the metal. And also, you had to deal with the fact that that produced a small but significant amount of ozone. So, you know, they started to have to put warning labels on the thing, and once you put warning labels on stuff, it's not very effective to sell as a consumer item. So those sort of got out of fashion. I rarely see one of those electrostatic air cleaners being sold anymore. Nowadays, they use similar technology. They tell you that positive ions are good for you or negative ions are good for you, and they sell you things to plug into the lighter of your old automobile, and it generates ozone. So, you know, sometimes it's not terrible, and sometimes it is terrible. But ozone generators are still being sold for usually Chinese cheap stuff. Anyway, that was fun. If anyone has any further questions or subjects tonight, please hit that push to talk and ID yourselves.
Welcome to the KC2RC repeater system.
Okay, we'll give it one last try. If anyone out there has a question or a topic for a discussion, would like to roll it around on the technical net, this is a good opportunity just to hit that push to talk and ID yourselves. Very well. Going, gone. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be June 4th, which will be a hybrid meeting and a virtual meeting using Zoom software. Club members will be emailed with details of the meeting. The physical location of the in-person meeting is the Knights of Columbus at 1511 10th Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. Non-members wishing to join a general meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. Occasionally, it's 28.381. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the Internet, as well as our 10-meter net. Just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com, or you could use www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services are generously donated by a local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As a great philosopher, Jimi Hendrix, once said, "Knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens." So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time to roll this up and shut it all down, but we'll be back June 11th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, Bob, KD2NVB. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. This is AC2GS clear.
Short but sweet, Matt. I'm going clear. See you next time around.
Okie dokie, Bob. Thanks for your help.